Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. This Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on a shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcast at home is quite easy. You just need a shortwave radio with a schedule of English language broadcast or a computer or smartphone with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's outfarpress.com, you can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports, find advice for listening to shortwave at home, and find internet links for global news sources. Please check it out and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, NHK Japan, and Radio Havana, Cuba. We will begin with Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. In a case brought forward by young activists, a German court has ruled that a 2019 climate protection law did not go far enough. In response, the government has sped up the target dates for climate neutrality by 5 years. The primary international news topic this week has been the intensifying fighting between Israel and Palestine. Deadly bombing in both directions followed police riots in Jerusalem at the Al-Aqsa Mosque, which degenerated into nationalist mob violence. Deutsche Welle interviewed Palestinian leader Hanan Ashrawi about the provocations and fighting, which she describes as ethnic cleansing in Jerusalem. A French court dismissed an ecocide case against 14 manufacturers of Agent Orange, ruling that the U.S. government bears responsibility. Then some brief COVID and vaccine updates, including a medical workers' strike in France. Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle.
The German cabinet is due to agree on more ambitious targets for lowering greenhouse gas emissions. This follows a court ruling that said a 2019 climate protection law did not go far enough. Chancellor Angela Merkel's ruling conservatives are under pressure to add some muscle to their climate policy. They're facing an election year challenge from the Green Party, and the environment is a deciding factor for many voters.
It is the young who have shouted the loudest lately about a looming climate disaster. Earlier this year, the German Constitutional Court ruled, in a case brought mainly by young people, that the government is not moving fast enough. Waiting until 2030 to impose tough burdens on polluters, the court said, violates the right to a clean environment, and the young would be worst affected because they will live with more of the consequences. The government knew it had to make changes. We've agreed that we have to act faster. As our basic law says, you can't just have freedoms for the present generations. You have to think about the freedoms for the generations to come. The bill the government is now introducing brings forward the target date for climate neutrality by 5 years. By 2045, transport, industry and agriculture, it is hoped, will in effect no longer emit any greenhouse gases. And the road to that goal of greening the German economy has been mapped out more precisely too. By 2030, emissions are to fall by 65% compared with 1990, 10% more ambitious than under the current plan. Will it be enough to stay on track in the coming years? Campaigners are not yet convinced.
We have seen German climate policy propelled to another level, if you will, also with the climate neutrality target of 2045. But now it's really time to underlay this also with concrete measures, because we don't have them yet.
The new plan should mean the pace of climate action will speed up noticeably sooner. Some worry poorer people here will end up paying the price if environmental taxes are increased. But for now, younger Germans are demanding climate justice, and politicians have been forced to listen.
The conflict between Israelis and Palestinians is intensifying. Hamas militants have been launching hundreds of rockets into Israel, and Israeli forces have been responding with devastating airstrikes on Gaza. The escalating tensions are also spilling over into street violence in several Israeli cities home to both Arabs and Jews.
This Arab man was pulled from his car and beaten by right-wing Israeli nationalists. It's the first act of nationalist violence to receive direct condemnation from the Prime Minister. Nothing justifies the lynching of Arabs by Jews or the lynching of Jews by Arabs. It's unacceptable. We will not tolerate this. This violence is not us. The conflict can be seen etched across the skyline. Hamas unleashed a stream of rocket fire towards Israel in retaliation for the destruction of a building in Gaza by Israel. These are the most intense hostilities that the country has seen in 7 years. It is particularly bad in mixed Jewish Arab towns, with relentless rocket fire and rioting. The Palestinians' message to Israel and the Jewish settlers is loud and clear. I address my words specifically to America and to Israel. Enough is enough. Leave us. We will remain thorns in your eyes. We will not leave our homeland. We will not leave our country. The U.S. maintained its support for Israel in its call for peace on Wednesday.
My expectation and hope is that this will be closing down sooner than later. But Israel has a right to defend itself when you have thousands of rockets flying into your territory.
Israeli's defense was to target the Hamas militants. They say many senior commanders have been killed. But the attacks have also claimed the lives of Palestinian civilians. Neither side is showing any sign of backing down, prompting the United Nations to warn of full-scale civil war.
I'm joined now by Dr. Hanan Ashrawi, Palestinian leader, legislator, and activist who served as an official spokesperson of the Palestinian delegation to the Middle East peace process, a familiar face around the world. I want to ask you about the claims that are being made after the violence today. We've had Hamas and Islamic Jihad both claiming responsibility for rocket attacks today. So are they both responsible? And if so, what does that tell us about who is in control in the Gaza Strip and the West Bank tonight?
Well, actually, whoever is in control of all of the occupied territories, all of occupied Palestine, is the Israeli occupation. It's the army. It's the Israeli occupation that controls the borders, that controls the airspace, the territorial waters, entry and exit points. And it's been getting away literally with murder. And it has been carrying out a systematic campaign of provocation and violence and assault. A multifaceted assault on Jerusalem in particular, and Al-Haram al-Sharif, Al-Aqsa Mosque, and again within Jerusalem, and of course provoking Palestinians, carrying out a series of ethnic cleansing steps in Jerusalem. Now, Hamas had given, and Islamic Jihad had given ultimatums repeatedly since the beginning of Ramadan. Israel has targeted the holy site. Israel has targeted the worshippers. And they were told that Israel is playing with fire, that they are provoking a situation of confrontation. And they continued and they escalated. And it's clear that this is a deliberate provocation, cynically used also for domestic reasons, but at the same time to show the Palestinians who's boss, to show their control. This is a response to supreme provocation. Yeah.
The claims that Palestinians are being or will be evicted from East Jerusalem and that no compensation is being offered to the Palestinians who would be forced to move. Is that true? Is there no recourse being offered to the Palestinians who live there now?
Look, Israel has been carrying out what we call demographic engineering or ethnic cleansing in Jerusalem. It has been taking over Palestinian homes. It has been kicking Palestinians out of their own homes. It has been demolishing Palestinian homes. It has been taking more and more land, leaving us with less than 13% of our land. in Jerusalem. It has been changing the character of Jerusalem. So the issue is not evicting people and giving them compensation. The issue is that they want to get rid of Palestinians and to cleanse, as they say, the city from Palestinians, non-Jewish Palestinians, Christians and Muslims, and to establish a new demographic and cultural and historical reality on Jerusalem, illegally, of course. That's why Palestinians are enslaved. It's not a matter of homes. It's a matter of a whole policy that has been targeting the old city, targeting Sheikh Jarrah, targeting Silwan, and, of course, targeting Isawiyah and other places. And they have surrounded Jerusalem with enormous settlements, trying to extricate Jerusalem from its Palestinian environment. And that's why we're looking at this as a very dangerous test case. Israel wants to see how far it can go in taking over Jerusalem and transforming the character and in exercising illegal sovereignty over Jerusalem. It is an occupied city and Israel has to abide by international law. This is horrific. It is unacceptable that Israel has a free hand to do whatever it wants to the Palestinians, to steal our land and resources, to kill people, Hanan, to demolish our own.
Dr. Hanan Ashraya, unfortunately, we're out of time, but we appreciate your time and your insights tonight. Thank you. A French court has dismissed the case of a 79-year-old French-Vietnamese woman who wanted to hold chemical giants to account for their part in the Vietnam War. The company supplied the U.S. with a dangerous toxin, Agent Orange, which was dropped over Vietnam by the U.S. military. The companies say the U.S. government bears the responsibility. Germany is making the Johnson & Johnson one-shot coronavirus vaccine available to all adults. However, the country's vaccine commission is still recommending it for those over the age of 60 because of rare blood clots seen in some recipients. The move is expected to help the country speed up its vaccination program. India's COVID-19 death toll passed 250,000 on Wednesday, but frontline workers say that the true number may be several times higher. The catastrophic scale of the pandemic in India could have been prevented. That's according to an independent panel assembled by the United Nations. The panel concluded that early warning signs went unheeded. And Britain will hold a public inquiry into the government's handling of the pandemic. Prime Minister Boris Johnson says the investigation will begin next year.
Now, medical staff who say they're exhausted by the battle against COVID-19 have launched a nationwide strike in France. They're demanding better pay and better conditions. The CGT trade union says the pandemic underlines the need for more nurses and intensive care beds.
Those reports were from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, dw.com. If you have access to internet, I recommend that you look at the English language France 24 channel on YouTube. It covers world events with a mostly neutral, intelligent perspective. Next, NHK World Radio Japan. The military coup in Myanmar has passed 100 days this week, and protests continue despite violent oppression and the arrest of many journalists. Some of the protesters are being trained by minority ethnic groups to battle the military. Biden has picked Rahm Emanuel as U.S. ambassador to Japan. Toyota Motor and a Japanese energy company are creating a new city that will be completely energized by clean hydrogen power derived from renewable energy sources. NHK Japan.
Myanmar is marking 100 days since a military-led coup in February plunged the country into crisis and chaos. Widespread protests against the junta continued Tuesday. A spokesperson for the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights urged the international community to get more involved in keeping the situation from deteriorating further. Along with the military's crackdown on citizens, members of the media are also being targeted. Journalists working for a Myanmar outlet have been arrested in neighboring Thailand on allegations of having crossed the border without permission. Thai police announced that they have arrested five people on Sunday in Chiang Mai in the country's north. The police added that they had been staying at a residence there for a month. Three are journalists belonging to DVB, Democratic Voice of Burma, which had its license revoked by the junta at the beginning of March, along with four other media companies. The two other people are activists. DVB's chief editor has issued a statement saying the arrested journalists had been covering demonstrations against the military until the day their license was revoked. The statement strongly urges the Thai authorities not to deport the five back to Myanmar, where their lives could be in serious danger. It also calls for global support, appealing to the UNHCR for protection. While news reporting has been severely impacted by the coup, it's believed dozens of journalists have been detained and satellite dishes removed to disrupt broadcasts. Figures being used by the UN put the death toll of citizens at over 700 since the February coup. In the latest development in anti-military demonstrations in Myanmar, it has been reported that some of those protesting have taken up arms in recent days. Protesters were on the streets of the city of Mandalay and other places on Wednesday, raising their hands in a three-finger salute to express civil disobedience. Some of those opposed to the military and its February coup have reportedly begun training with the armed forces of minority ethnic groups. Local media outlets report that people armed with guns clashed with security forces in the region of Sagaing, near the border with India, from Tuesday through Wednesday. They say at least 16 people, including civilians, were killed. The Financial Times says U.S. President Joe Biden has chosen a former member of the Obama administration as U.S. ambassador to Japan. Rahm Emanuel is a former congressman who once served as chief of staff in the White House. He was also mayor of Chicago. He was criticized at the time over his handling of a fatal police shooting of a black teenager in 2014. Emanuel has close ties to Biden. Earlier, speculation said the 61-year-old might be tapped as the transportation secretary or ambassador to China. The post in Tokyo has been vacant since Bill Hagerty left office in July 2019. Strengthening the U.S.-Japan alliance, while China poses growing geopolitical threats, is expected to be a priority for the next ambassador. Toyota Motor is teaming up with leading Japanese energy company Enel's to run an experimental community on clean hydrogen power. The two companies have agreed on a new partnership to explore the use of hydrogen energy at Woven City. That's the prototype city of the future Toyota is building at the foot of Mount Fuji in central Japan. The companies say Enel's will set up a station to supply the city with hydrogen derived from renewable energy. Toyota will use the hydrogen to power the fuel cell vehicles that will run in Woven City. The automaker will also install hydrogen-based generators to provide the futuristic community with power. Toyota plans to initially have 360 people live there, including senior citizens, families, and inventors. The company envisions artificial intelligence and robots helping the residents with their daily routines, while self-driving cars transport people and goods. Toyota and Enel's say they want to help achieve a carbon-neutral society by 2050, as Japan and many other countries have committed to doing.
Those reports were from NHK World Radio Japan. They are now heard from 9:30 to 10 p.m. at 7245 and 7355, or on the web at www.3.nhk.or.jp. All the times I announce are for Pacific Daylight Saving Time, so please adjust them to your time zone. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report, or could make a donation for production cost of this listener-funded program, I may be reached through the website and PayPal, or by writing to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. Please, if you find this program beneficial, please help support this freely distributed weekly radio show. We will conclude with Radio Havana, Cuba. Brazilian President Bolsonaro congratulated the Rio de Janeiro police for an attack on a slum, leaving 29 people dead. Then a viewpoint on the return of widespread poverty in Brazil since the ouster of Dilma Rousseff and the decline of the Workers' Party. The Institute for Peace Studies reported 47 Colombians have been killed by riot squads in the demonstrations and work stoppages against President Duque. The Iranian foreign minister criticized the Israeli police who attacked Palestinians worshiping at the Al-Aqsa Mosque, which triggered the currently escalating war. Radio Havana, Cuba.
Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro has congratulated the police of Rio de Janeiro for the repressive operation carried out on May the 6th in the Jacarezinho slum, leaving 29 people dead. On his Twitter account, the fascist ruler of Brazil said, "By treating traffickers who steal, kill, and destroy families as victims, the media and the left are equating them with ordinary, honest citizens who respect the law and their fellow human beings. It is a serious offense to the people who for a long time have been hostage to criminality. Congratulations to the civil police of Rio de Janeiro." The Brazilian president described the 29 people killed in the operation as, quote, criminals, and paid homage to the civil police agent, André Leonardo, whom he said lost his life in combat against the criminals. According to the judge of the Federal Supreme Court, Edson Fachin, who ordered the federal prosecutor's office to open an investigation against the civil police, he specified that the operation had, quote, indications of arbitrary executions.
In 2019, the living standards of a large part of the Brazilian population suddenly dropped, a problem that began 3 years earlier following the parliamentary coup against the then-constitutional president Dilma Rousseff from the Workers' Party, a political organization that in 2003 implemented social programs to favor the poor class and managed to remove Brazil from the global hunger chart in 2014. But the right-wing-led uprising vanished the achievements of the South American country, first under Michel Temer and now under Jair Bolsonaro's administration. Brazil is back on the hunger chart. More than 125 million citizens currently suffer from food shortages. The Getúlio Vargas Foundation put the poverty level at about 13% of the population until the end of last March. The fact is that actions in favor of the most vulnerable, who have seen their living conditions deteriorate even further due to the economic, social, and health crisis generated by COVID-19 and the dismal response of the government, have been sidelined. Bolsonaro's management has led to the reduction of social spending. In the last few days, in 8 states, Brazilians denounced the cutting of funds for housing construction for people with fewer resources. At the end of April, the president decided to veto 73% of the resources for this sector, so that as of this month, the construction of more than 200,000 houses will be paralyzed. According to local media, quoted by the multinational television network Telesur, during 2020, public investment reached the lowest rates in the history of this social program created in 2009. Thus, informal settlements emerge, which today are part of the Brazilian geography. They are the so-called favelas, where millions of citizens live in dire conditions. The citizens who occupy these areas, usually overcrowded, are in many cases unemployed people or inserted in the informal labor market, and in addition have also faced police violence. Last week, nearly 30 residents of the Jacarezinho favela in Rio de Janeiro were killed in an anti-drug raid. The United Nations recently called for an investigation into this killing, described as the deadliest in the city, and stated that Brazil's police department has a history of disproportionate and unnecessary use of force. The ineffective government response to COVID-19, increasing social inequality, unemployment, hunger, and violence, is the scenario that Brazil is facing today, since the progress made under the Workers' Party governments has been fading away.
The Institute for Peace Studies, or INDEPAS, and the non-governmental organization Temblores reported on Sunday that after 12 days of massive mobilizations, Colombia suffered 47 fatalities due to repression by agents of the Mobile Anti-Riot Squad, the ESMAD, and the National Army. According to social organizations, of the 47 killed, 39 were due to police violence, with 963 arbitrary detentions and 12 cases of sexual violence by police against female prisoners. The list of missing persons is alarming, standing at 54 since the beginning of the massive mobilizations. Now, protesters across the country are demanding the repeal of pension and health reforms, as well as greater opportunities to combat the deep inequalities in Colombia. Colombia's president, Iván Duque, said on Monday that issues raised by young demonstrators would be included in national discussions meant to curb nearly 2 weeks of anti-government protests as he made a brief visit to Cali, the scene of violence over the weekend. But while the Colombian president was obviously trying to calm the waters, protest organizers and strikers said that the work stoppage and demonstrations would continue until their demands are met. Demonstrations have been fueled by outrage at a tax plan which would raise sales taxes. That proposal was cancelled, but protesters' demands now include a basic income and the withdrawal of a long-debated health reform that they claim is too vague to correct inequalities. Protests erupted in the face of Duque's controversial tax reform bill, which has since been withdrawn. Now protesters across the country are demanding the repeal of the pension and healthcare reform, as well as the provision of greater opportunities to combat the deep inequality that exists in Colombia. Iran's foreign minister says the apartheid regime of Israel not only steals people's lands and homes, but also shoots innocent worshippers in one of the holiest mosques for Muslims. Mohammad Javad Zarif made the remarks in a post on his Twitter account in reference to the latest wave of violence by the Israeli forces against the Palestinian people in Jerusalem Al-Quds and Al-Aqsa Mosque, which has so far seen hundreds of Palestinians injured, many in critical condition, after several days of violent clashes. The Palestinian Red Crescent Society announced that at least 305 Palestinians were injured on Monday alone, several in critical condition after they were attacked by Israeli forces who fired stun grenades and rubber bullets in clashes outside the Al-Aqsa Mosque in occupied East Jerusalem Al-Quds. In his tweet, the Iranian foreign minister censored the Israeli regime's moves against the Palestinian people and said, quote, "It wasn't enough for the Israeli regime to steal people's land and homes, create an apartheid regime, and refuse to vaccinate civilians under illegal occupation."
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's website is working well at radiohc.cu, though the podcast have not been updated. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140, and from 5 p.m. to 11 at either 6000, 6060, or 6100. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcasts, get a global perspective. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows. Please consider making a safe donation online through PayPal. There's a link at my website along with the podcast link, and get advice for listening at home. The Shortwave Report, which is now in its 25th year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. The Shortwave Report is produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.